Hello and welcome to Capricorn Studio for, what year is it? 2022. Happy birthday, belated, or perhaps early. I am rested and slowly catching up. This is an important part of it after doing the tune-in readings. There's always this puzzle around Capricorn time when I have to do two readings, which of course I want to be different so that people who get both get something fresh and interesting. And so I've got a plan for that. And so you have everybody has been comped the tune in reading. If you didn't buy that and you want to pitch in toward that, I'll put the link on your page. But in any event, you have it, and what's in there is in there. And some of what I alluded to in that reading, I want to go into more detail in this reading. So I'm going to take a different format. And I think we can do that partly because we are in the last year of Pluto in Capricorn. And so Pluto doesn't change signs very often. I became an astrologer with Pluto in late Scorpio. And very soon after, Pluto entered Sagittarius, and it went through Sagittarius and cleared that sign, and then it went into Capricorn in 08, and now it's in the last year of that. So an astrological career doesn't include many Pluto transits, and Pluto in Aquarius forthcoming is going to last for 22 years. That one transit is going to encompass quite a few astrological careers, and is going to be the last Pluto transit that ingress of many of us experience. If you live to 2044, you'll get to experience Pluto entering Pisces. That ought to be interesting, but since Pluto has this deep esoteric connection to Pisces. But for now, my idea for today is to review my observation of our societies. We don't do enough of that. We don't look back enough, and that our looking forward is not really about going forward so much as it is going away from the past. And in some ways, attempting to escape the past, and that often leaves the past unresolved. And so, what, escaping or not, we're driven forward by our society in a really aggressive way. And I'm fond of the Course in Miracles method of learning, which is 50 initial lessons and then a 3-week review. Then I think it's groups of 20 lessons and then a 10-day review, and then this repeats all throughout the first year. So there's a lot of reviewing going on in A Course in Miracles, and learning, of course, happens by repetition. So what I want to do in this session is look back, and I've written quite a bit about Pluto and Aquarius. I'll probably say a little more about that, and I have some writing about Pluto and Aquarius in my written presentations, particularly in Aquarian Era, Aquarian Age. But so much has happened under the influence of Pluto and Capricorn that it is astounding. I just went down to the business office where the printer is and printed out all the major transits or a compilation of major transits between 2008, January 25th, 2008, and today. And then there's two kind of prehistory dates I'll go over in a second. But let's say, as a point of beginning, that right now there's quite a impressive feat of astrological whatever you want to call it, creation, arrangement, synchronicity going on in Capricorn. And this includes Venus retrograde, which is looped around Pluto as part of that process. That was what was going on from December 11th through December 25th. The station retrograde happens on the 19th, but there's a conjunction to Pluto on the 11th, and then station's retrograde. There's a Venus station's retrograde in Cap. Then there's a conjunction to Pluto on the 25th. And now Mercury in 2 days is about to station retrograde. It too is going to retrograde from the other direction into Pluto from Aquarius back into Cap and then make a series of conjunctions to Pluto. There's going to be a full moon on the 17th, I think. Is that correct? That is opposite Pluto. So the sun will be conjunct Pluto. Sun's about to be conjunct. And the full moon, 1 degree opposition to Pluto. So there's a lot of Pluto going on. And there's been a lot of Pluto going on. Pluto has been this sort of slowly drifting point of orientation for all that has happened since 2008. However, well, and it's getting a lot of attention now. And so part of how I take my lead in astrology is from the planets themselves. And when they are knocking loudly, when they are when they keep showing back up, and like one, you know, one day shows up as the FedEx guy, and then the next day it's the pizza guy, and then it's Amazon.com and all that stuff. That's time to listen when the same message is coming through over and over again, and so that's now in this particular solar return chart that you're having. So in this method, I take the entire time the sun is in a sign to do the solar, you know, as the solar return, and there's certain highlights. It's, you know, I can usually choose one chart, you know, and see the other ones included in it. But what I've done now is I have gone back to, well, first I went back to January 2008, for the moment when Pluto entered Cap. And then I remembered what I wrote way back before that when Pluto was in Sag and Chiron was entering Capricorn. And my theory of Chiron in Capricorn at the time that Chiron entered Capricorn was that this is the setup. This is going to be the setup for Pluto, and that everything we need to know about Pluto and Capricorn, we're going to get in a kind of bonsai form from just a 4-year transit, maybe a little less, of Chiron in Capricorn, because Chiron is objective. It shines an even light on everything. Its goal is to make you aware of things that you need to work out and work through and take care of and all that stuff. And so I thought, well, whatever happens in these 4 years is going to be predictive of not only what happens, but how we address it, whether we actually grapple with the issues. Chiron enters Capricorn 2 months to the day after the September 11th incident, and right around the moment when Bush ordered the bombing of Afghanistan. And so at the outset of Chiron and Capricorn, the United States entered what has historically become known as its longest war, and I think notably one that people didn't really care that much about. And so there was from the outset a failure to grapple with the issues. And I don't mean to be political here, but I don't consider contemplating the ethics of one country bombing another country into oblivion and dragging its people in for 20 years to be political. This is a purely moral issue. And as I said to my readers at the time, my objection to this has nothing to do with politics. It's got nothing to do with Bush or Cheney or whoever. It's got to do with the fact that I'm Quaker, and I am objecting to the fact that the country of which I am part of and pay my taxes to is going to now wage war on a civilization that apparently had absolutely nothing to do with anything. There's something else going on. And it turned out what was going on, by the way, was a lot of opium that wound up in a lot of pharmaceutical products, that wound up in a lot of CVS, Rite Aid, and Winn-Dixie pharmacies. And that raining of murder on the Afghanis came back on the American people. And I can't imagine this was merely an American problem. Everything's international, particularly under the influence of Pluto and Sag. What Pluto and Sag did in that long era of Pluto and Sag, let's get some dates on that. So we're going to go back even further. There's no limit how far you can keep going back. Let's see. Events. Pluto. Pardon me while I do this without stopping the music. Pluto enters Sag 1/17/95. January 17. For some reason, Pluto likes to change signs in January. 1/17/95. April 20th, 95. November 10th, 1995. And then all the way clear through 2008 was in Sagittarius. And It was Pluto and Sag was a little more fun than Pluto and Capricorn. I mean, bad things happened, but like we got world beat music, and we got a whole new kind of world beat fusion cuisine taking over, and suddenly, you know, people in Oshkosh were getting to try sushi, and all kinds of things happened. And the globalists basically took over. At the time, it was called NAFTA and GATT, and they would give it these names. And what it essentially was the construction of one world government. And then what happens during Pluto and Capricorn is the deconstruction of all the normal forms of government. So in any event, check back, you know, think back about your life from very late 01, the immediate post 9/11 era, out through February, March. Let's get this back on the screen. February 21, 2005, Chiron enters Aquarius. And all, actually, 2005 in total is the transition year. Where Chiron is leaving Capricorn. And so all of two, three, and four, and then on and off through five, and a little piece of 01, Chiron's in your sign. That's the prehistory. So what I suggest doing is however you want to arrange these dates, and they're not specific dates because I don't have a natal chart to plot against, but I've had great success with my clients in keeping a kind of an astrological journal of past transits, and then once you're doing this, you can then find a way to apply it to your natal chart, which is not that hard. All you need to do is just aim the transits to slightly different degrees of the zodiac, and I can help you do that if you'd like. And then you really get a sense of how you experience the passage of time. This is all astrology is about. Now, you could add to that, well, how you make decisions. So that's part of the passage of time. And then the basis of making those decisions, that by extension is part of the passage of time. But really, astrology is about how we ride out time and what we do with our options in time. So our first range is this late 01 through on and off 2005. I must have done this in other projects, but 1993 is one of the most important years in all of Capricorn history because of the conjunction of Uranus and Neptune in 1993. And so if it's not becoming plainly obvious, Capricorn has been the scene of very important astrology throughout much of our lifetimes. And that astrology describes what has happened to the world better than anything I've ever seen. Well, okay, we'd have to give honorable mention to the Uranus-Pluto conjunction in Virgo in basically 65 and 66, right? So that's a huge one. But notice Pluto is involved and Uranus is involved. Okay, then in 93 and in a wide orb of that, because then we've got Neptune in the act. It's Uranus-Neptune in Capricorn, which is a kind of a breakdown, the first major breakdown of society's systems, and also of the concept of government as we have it. Government meaning corporate government governance, and the role of these institutions in our lives. And 93 is the epicenter of that, but Uranus takes 7 years to go through a sign. Pluto takes like 12, 13 years to go through a sign. So this is it has a very wide orb. But 93 is a good reference point for kind of a before and after. And then from 93, it's not a long jump out to late 01 when Capricorn enters. Sorry, Chiron enters Capricorn. 05, transitioning out, 06, okay, late Sag, and now we get into the Pluto era, Pluto and Capricorn, which is the topic of our reading today, the history of Pluto in Capricorn. So Pluto first enters Capricorn on January 25th, 2008. 08 is a transitional year for Pluto into Capricorn, so it spends part of the year in Sag, part of the year in Capricorn. It alternates back and forth. By the end of the year, Pluto is solidly in Capricorn. I believe it is in Sag for the election of 08. So Obama is elected in 2008 with Pluto in the very, very tippy end of Sag, and if I'm remembering my history correctly, the inauguration takes place with Pluto in Capricorn. So it is a new era, the Bush-Cheney era. Sorry if you're not from the United States, but these things affect everyone because the entire world is just basically right now the playground of the United States and China. So this begins a new era. So 08 is a transitional year. So the question is, what was so transitional about 2008? Remembering everything that you have learned about Chiron in Cap. That's the one that's late 01 out through 05. So this is the template. And then Pluto and Capricorn begins. And we are off and running by early 2009. Now, 08 was hugely transitional. This was all the banking failures, the insurance companies, AIG, TARP, and all this stuff. It looked like the world was ending. And many people experienced complete life-altering recreations of their existence in early, all throughout 2008. All right, let's take a break. This is Vision Quest featuring Jelko. the first ingress of Pluto into Capricorn, and think back on that year, 2008, it was ridiculous, is the inception chart for this phase. The inception charts are very important in astrology because one of the qualities of astrology is to examine the origin of things. So let's just take a look at this chart, and it should be the third chart. I want to put the Chiron charts in. It should be the third chart in your PDF section. If anybody really wants charts for Uranus, Neptune, and Cap, let me know. Okay, so in this inception chart, we've got Pluto at 0000 Capricorn and both benefics in Capricorn. Benefics is a term from classical astrology, Venus being the lesser benefic, Jupiter being the greater benefic. Take that with a pinch of salt there, but they are both the benefics and they're in Capricorn. And so this to me says that you're going to make this work for you. It may not be easy, and there's a lot of friction between Pluto and Capricorn since they're of very different nature. Pluto is kind of the bull in the china shop, or the what's a way to what's a, kind of a Shiva-like presence that treads things, but there's clear evidence of regeneration with Pluto, sorry, with Venus and Jupiter in Cap. Now, what's also going on is, and no one failed to notice this at the time who was paying attention to these charts, is this grand conjunction spanning most of Aquarius. Sun, Nessus, Chiron, Vesta, Neptune, Mercury, North Node, bunch of eclipses coming to Aquarius as well, indicated by the North Node. Aquarius is your second place. Second is an extension of the first. The first is identity. The second is about values, assets, movable possessions, available cash. And as I believe I mentioned in Tune In, there is a, how do I say this? The overlay of the second house and Aquarius indicates that your values are very often subject to or in tune with or in some way about a collective kind of values. Now, Aquarius is not the most collective sign. Pisces is. But Aquarius is the group that surrounds you. Aquarius are the people who influence you and also the people for whom you possess some responsibility. And my evaluation of that in Tune In was this casts you as the kind of community treasurer. You're the keeper of the community chest and or trust. That's another way to say it. And and you're the right person to do this. You know, woe betide anyone who abuses this power. I'm hereby invoking Ganesha to enforce these words. But I'm assuming that you have an ethical framework. And when you have an ethical framework, you're the perfect person to guard the collective property of the community. But the other side of that is that your values are also very subject to the values of the community. And so you want to make sure that you're making your own choices and you're setting your own priorities. Okay, so that being cautionary. But now notice that at the outset of this whole thing, right, at the first minute, Jan 25, 08, 9:37 and 12 seconds p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Pluto enters Cap and Venus and Jupiter are there, right there. The benefics are with you, and then pretty much everything else is in Aquarius, not quite, but almost. Everything else is in Aquarius, with notable exceptions. Saturn and the Moon are in Virgo, and this means that there's a real relationship between you and a whole bunch of people close to you and a whole bunch of people close to them, you know, out to the second degree of whatever it's called. Okay, so bear that in mind. This sets the tone for the whole thing. Now, I'm jumping ahead 4 years now to... To the first of the series of Uranus Pluto squares. Now, this series of squares goes out into the following year, but it is the most active as it's applying in 2011. 2011 was an utterly extraordinary year, unlike anything up until now. It included the Fukushima nuclear disaster, which we're still living with. It included the Arab Spring protests. It included the Occupy movement that spread around the world by the autumn of that year. It included the public union movement in Madison, Wisconsin, where people stood up for their public unions, and there was a guy named Scott Walker who was governor making a lot of trouble for people and in some ways got his way and demolished unions. But the turnout of human presence was incredible in that place and time. And indeed, the Occupy movement, I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful to have something like that now? Like, where is it when you need it? We really need it now. Then by 2012, we're into this 2012 phenomenon. Notably, the 2012 phenomenon takes place in Capricorn. It's the winter solstice of 2012 that is the Capricorn phenomenon, the 2012 thing. By the way, if you want a review of the 2012 thing, on the front of planetwaves.fm, I interview one of the leading legit Mayan scholars, a guy named Ed Barnhart, who runs a Mayan exploration center, and he's very good with the Mayan calendars. So the 2012 thing takes place in the year of Uranus square Pluto, and it takes place in the first degree of Capricorn because that's the solstice. And what was there was you know, I searched these charts for years to find the thing that was really, really outstanding. In particular, what was outstanding about this fabled time, the winter solstice of 2012. And what I got, the best I could do, and I never jumped on the 2012 bandwagon because I couldn't confirm it in the Western astrology. But I thought, well, this is important anyway. Let's read it. What you get on that day is the conjunction of the Sun and Juno in the first degree of Capricorn. So the Sun and Juno, well, what's that about? Well, it seemed to say something about marriage relationships. And it's taking place in Capricorn. My assessment was that this, whatever we're going through, we need to figure out how to do our relationships differently, how to relate to one another in a way that's not about ownership. We need to redefine the concept of marriage to make it more workable and to have the expectations of marriage be more reasonable. That includes not having a scenario where we believe that marriage is about men possessing women. There's a book by Andrea Dworkin called Pornography, Men Possessing Women. The book's got the wrong title. It should be called Marriage, Men Possessing Women. So that was my whole 2012 theory, basically. So that happens. The Newtown massacre happens, if that happened. There's some questions about that, legit ones. And this bending of reality goes on into 2013. And at the end of this Uranus square Pluto in 2013, we get something special, which is the opposition of Jupiter and Pluto in the summer of 2013. This is August 7, 2013. And in this chart, let's put Capricorn in the ascendant. In this chart, pardon me, I'm kind of reading slash channeling in real time here. Essentially, Jupiter jumps into the act of the now separating Uranus-Pluto square. And this is a very important time in your relationships in the summer of 2013, winter if you're from down under. Jupiter is in the seventh, Pallas Athene's in the seventh, Mars is in the seventh, and Mercury is in the seventh. Then there's a whole bunch of stuff in the eighth in the form of a impressive grouping in Leo, your eighth house, a place where this is just a very important time in relationships for you, no matter what the relationships were. And part of what was going on is that you were dealing with some dichotomy between intense desire and things being a little bit distant and not necessarily so passionate. So it's almost like a hot fudge sundae. There was the hot part and the cool part. And interestingly, the cool part is coming through a hot sign, Leo, and the hot part is coming through a cool sign, Cancer. So you've got a little yin and yang going on here. Now, I have got, now that we're going to jump ahead again. So the Jupiter-Pluto series of conjunctions starting in 13, lasting about 9 months. And I like what Isabel Hickey says about the conjunction of Jupiter and Pluto, which is to see and experience the common thread between all the world's religions. Or as my teacher J.J.H. said, many shores, but one lake. So that's going on. And it may be that you were looking for the common lake of the many shores or something like that with someone else. And Jupiter-Pluto indicates a spiritual orientation. Jupiter and Pluto can bring out the best in one another. And a way of getting past power struggles in relationships, which of course was the theme of the 2012 chart, right? How do we have this not be about owning each other? How do we make our own rules within this structure? And look, a lot changed after that. We had same-sex marriage approved. That's impressive. And so talk about a fundamental reconstruction of the entire concept of marriage to the chagrin of many. And how many gay Republican couples are there? There's a lot of them. So there you go. We won that round. Okay, so let's go to 2016. Now, I have a question mark on this chart because I cast it and I didn't. I was using a program where you don't name the chart, you just print the chart out. And I don't remember why I cast this chart, but it sure is an interesting chart. So let's mark late November 16. Capricorn is gone. The sun's gone into Sag because it's late November. So it's right around Thanksgiving time of 2016, if you're American. I'm sorry for being so Amerocentric in this reading, but that's where I've got my chair planted right now. And to me, the theme of this chart is about rebelling from the past, which is about your insistence on finding security and confidence in who you actually are, not who people want you to be or not who you think people want you to be. So this is the actual lesson of maturity in Western culture. To say it again, finding who you are despite what people think you should be or what you think they think you should be. So both, you have to deal with both. People project their shit onto you and their expectations onto you. And then we project it back onto people in terms of imagining what you know, we imagine they want for us, and can often rebel or have to rebel against that as well. So this, a lot of this involves your family, involves the four walls you live in, it involves any question or concern about safety that you may have. Also, a very motivated time for increasing your personal wealth. Again, we're talking 2016, having the focus and the motivation to make something of yourself financially. And I think that in the right spirit, this is a perfectly legitimate spiritual goal. Prosperity is necessary to some greater or lesser extent for every living thing on the planet. And if mice invented it, well, how bad can it be? All right. Also in this chart, Venus is conjunct Pluto in Capricorn, closely conjunct. And further, the moon is conjunct Jupiter in your 10th house. So this is a very important time for balancing home life and career. And it also shows you being passionately driven to be who you are and express yourself. That's Venus Pluto, lusting for reality, lusting for your true self. And then Mars in the second Aquarius, motivating you to allow yourself to be motivated by the acquisition of wealth. Anything else here? The confusing part of this era is that it's still fairly early in the Neptune in the third house. So let's cover Neptune in the third after music break. While we're here, let's consider the movement of Neptune in your chart, which leads to the present moment because Neptune is still in Pisces. One of the most interesting things about the Capricorn solar chart, which is really what we're working with here, is the presence of Pisces on the third house. So in a book I'm planning to write this year about the solar chart, giving a delineation of all 12 sun signs using the solar chart as my guide, Pisces on the third house is like almost thing one about Capricorn. It's absolutely un-Capricorn. By the conventional definitions of like the climber and the business person and the strategic thinker and all this stuff. Because to have Pisces on the third is to say you basically think like a Pisces. The third house is how you think. It's your style of thought, your approach to communication. And to have Pisces there is to take an intuitive, empathic, sympathetic, critter-loving, creative approach, or to have that capacity. Pisces is a fabulous sign to have on the third house. Now, the third house has the nature of Mercury, that's not very Piscean, right? Mercury's in fall or detriment, whatever, maybe both in Pisces. However, you want that creative element infused all throughout your ability to think, to communicate, and to write. The potential problem is that it can be disorganized and can't necessarily have itself together and can be influenced emotionally more than rationally. So the challenge of anything with that mixes something mercurial like the third or Mercury and that mixes with something Piscean is you have to learn how to navigate your intuition and get something productive from it. But the thing is, it's much easier to go from that direction of having a creative source available in a place you can like reach for at the third house, you're there all the time, than it is to have none of that and have to like find it somewhere else or make it up. So this is the better direction of flow, to like organize the potential rather than, well, I'm so organized, where's my potential? So what happens in April of 2011, that monumental year, while the world is warming up to the conjunction of the square of Uranus and Pluto that's going to shake things up so much it's quite close together. And 11 was a massive year. Like, it's really worth reviewing 2011. If you'd like to find out how to get into the Planet Waves archives for 2011, I can do that. Neptune enters Pisces. Chiron's already in Pisces. This provides a huge help. April 4, 2011, Neptune enters Pisces. We're going back a bit, but it's changing the subject. And then I'm going to come back into the closer to the present time. So there's a long stretch of Chiron in Pisces and Neptune in Pisces in this era, 2010-11, and Neptune remains there today. So Neptune makes it even more Pisces. This does not necessarily make it easier for you to think in a rational way, but it certainly adds to the creative potential and the confusion potential. Fortunately, very fortunately, Chiron was there. Because Chiron provides a focusing power and even a communication power that leaves Mercury in the dust. And so you have that. And I would remind you that you, whatever you may think of your creativity and your creative potential, for you, it's merely a state of mind. It's not about something inherent, or to the degree that it is about something inherent, you have that thing. You're in full possession of it. It's a question of, you know, whether you put your rudder down and how you work the sales, your navigation ability, your ability to understand weather patterns, your mind is guided by water and watery influences. So therefore, you have to learn all things water, learn the law of the sea, and study some, you know, navigational charts, and take up that part of yourself that is, and I don't remember the name of this mythical being that's the half mermaid, half goat, but not enough is said about this in astrology, and it by far makes Capricorn the freakiest sign of the zodiac to have a combination of a goat and a mermaid. It's an earth sign, but its creature has fins. That Scorpio water sign with a scorpion comes close. We can say, well, you know, maybe it's the desert used to be the ocean, and there were some critters that survived everything drying out, and one of them is the scorpion. Capricorn, much more fun. The sea goat. Well, I figured out what in my kind of Wayne's World way why that is. There are a lot of aquatic constellations running through that part of the sky, and if you're going to have a goat running around, it better be able to swim and swim well. And that's the short version of my theory of why Capricorn is ruled by a sea goat. It would have been mean. The goat would have drowned. But now the goat can swim and somehow can also climb up the mountain. Okay, so that's my pitch for Neptune and Pisces in the third. This picks us up to, we did 2016. Let's go to 2017. 2017 now. We're starting to get into the world right before the modern world. 2017, 12/19/17, Saturn returns to your sign. This is a big deal. Capricorn's a Saturn-ruled sign. Saturn shows up for the first time in nearly three decades. When it does, I hadn't noticed this till now. Excuse me. When it does, the sun is in a conjunction to Pholus. This is a kind of a genie bottle opening. Anything with Pholus, you can apply the metaphor of the genie bottle opening. And this genie bottle sure as shit opened in 2017, 2018, to some extent 2019, then again in 2020 and 2021. So we've been living through genie bottle after genie bottle. Saturn in Cap, good for you. It provides you with your full resources for the land-based side of your character. And we're approaching the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. It's still December. A little more than 2 years off, if I've got that right. But it's coming. They're within 18 degrees. And this is a conjunction that takes place something like every 37 years or something like that. It varies, but it's in the four decade range. It's up, you know, 3.5 decade range. So it's a rare conjunction. Last one took place in the 80s, and we're warming up to it. So now we get into the first of the, for you personally, the reconstruction of all that Pluto has Shiva-like dismantled through the prior decade. Interesting, the moon is in Capricorn at the time of this. It's in a less than 1 degree conjunction to Pluto. Certifiably interesting. Saturn's not done being in Sag, though. It retrogrades back, and then it comes back into Capricorn. So there's a fairly long run of Saturn through Capricorn. When you go end to end, it's about 3 years. Usually, it's less. Now, then the next thing that happens, I think, of great significance is that Chiron changes signs for the first time in 8 years, entering Aries. This is noteworthy to you because Chiron is it's entering the cardinal cross. It's helping you begin your odyssey of independence from your family and of really finding yourself and finding out, I think, this is me, I don't know who's listening, that as Bob Dylan said, if you try to be anybody but yourself, you will fail. And I'm always trying to rewrite that into a positive expression. Though I do trust the Bard, and I think that he stated it in the negative, which he hardly ever does. He stated it in the negative to make sure it had some brass knuckles on it. Now, that's happened, and then, so Chiron's gone into Aries and it's begun this self-actualization journey, which for you is emotional grounding and at really being yourself. Whatever is going on then starts this cascade of events. Pholus has entered Capricorn, where it remains between Saturn, between the previous winter and the spring. Pholus, very slow mover, has entered Capricorn, and this connects you with some deep ancestral stuff. It connects you with the land in another way, helps you personally identify with being connected with the land, and we begin the Saturn Pholus square, series of squares. So there's a lot of action and movement and tension in this 90-degree meeting of the first two centaurs. Goes on for a while. Saturn works its way through your sign. This is usually a house clearing. It is a new start. It can be messy. It can be chaotic. And of note, it is all moving toward a conjunction to Saturn and Pluto. That conjunction is a one-hit wonder. It takes place on 1/12/20. It is a five-way conjunction of the Sun, Ceres, Earth Goddess, Ceres, and a kind of rival of Pluto for her daughter Persephone. Pluto, exact to the degree, the Sun is very close, but Ceres, Pluto, Saturn, all occupying the same degree, and Mercury is there. Something big is about to happen. This is January 12th, 2020. Who knew? This is the day that, right around these 24 hours, China releases the first sequence into the international databases for the constructed, let's say, in silico theoretical SARS-CoV-2, MN908947, the first one. And this starts off this cascade of events that we are still more than 2 years later. Oh, today's the anniversary of this, the two-year anniversary. We are still being thrown around and roiled and getting seasick and all kinds of things happening. A little later in the month, so that is a one-time event, but it knocks on. It's like that's a term from geology describing small earthquakes leading to bigger earthquakes, knock-on effect. A couple of weeks later, Pluto makes its first square of five to Eris. So there's two major squares going on between Capricorn and Aries. Chiron Pholus and Pluto Eris. There's no way to overstate this. You don't want to. I'm talking to a Capricorn. You prefer things to be stated in simple, plain talk without hyperbole. So let's say that it is hyper-focusing the relationship between one mode of your expression, your first house sign, right? The sign that you're said to be or said to be rising, that you're supposed to identify with, right? That's the game of astrology. I'm a Pisces. Like, look at all the ways I'm a Pisces. Look, I've got art supplies on my desk and, you know, a little jar of like the best pot in the world. And ooh, I've got musical instruments. Well, you're a Capricorn. And there is a quake going on. Then deep in the fourth house, we've got Eris activated. We've got Chiron activating Pholus in your sign. You are inwardly in motion through this time. And these squares persist. They continue with the Pluto-Eris square finally ending just last month. Okay, so this is the nature of the journey of this, you know, very important, perhaps the most important time in your entire life. Remembering that the story of 2008 to 2022-23 has a prehistory, and that's Chiron through Capricorn. Basically, very late, 01, 2, 3, 4, and then 5 is a transition. And then, if you're looking for more information, go back to the conjunction of Uranus and Neptune in your sign in 1993. And start in 93 and work your way out. Then look at 91, 92, and 94. Okay, what'd you learn from that? And then 91 and 95, and you just slowly, with Neptune, you want to go in concentric circles out in all directions. And who knows, maybe you've got more directions of time you can work with than just the past, the present, and the future. You know, we could say a lot about Pluto in Aquarius, but what I think this is going to do is really push you to focus your values. And I think that the important thing, as I've said in the reference reading for the sign Cancer, Aquarian Year, Aquarian Age, Reconciling Accounts of Humanity, that one, that this is your time to question what it means to be a person. It's time to question what it means to be a person in the context of a world where essentially technology is God and technologists are priests. And if you don't bow to technology as God and technologists as priests, you risk being excommunicated. Well, my question is, how do you really feel about that? Thank you for listening, for your business, for your trust, and for the thing I consider the most important, which is your investment of your time listening, and also, you know, having enough confidence to allow my ideas into your mind. Got questions? EFC at, let's use, chironreturn.org, and I'd be happy to you know, return your thoughts. Once again, happy birthday, and thank you for your patience with this reading. Lots of love, and bye for now.